off at the image. Caroline relaxes a little. Don't make me laugh when I'm angry with you. Her lips form a pout. You have a way with words. I open my arms, and she walks into my embrace. Why didn't you call? She asks as she hugs me back, her anger dissipating. It's a lot to take on board, I whisper as I hold her. I needed time to think. Alone? I don't answer. I don't want to lie. Monday night I was with, Heather, and last night it was, what was her name? Dawn. Caroline sniffs and steps out of my arms. I thought as much. I know you too well, Maxim. What was she like? I shrug as an image of Heather's lips around my cock comes to mind. Caroline sighs. You're such a whore, she says with her usual disdain. How can I deny it? Caroline, of all people, knows about my nocturnal pursuits. She has a collection of choice epithets to describe me, and regularly berates me for my promiscuity. Yet, she still went to bed with me. You're whoring your way through your grief, while I had to endure dinner with Daddy and a stepsow alone. It was awful, she quips. And last night, I was lonely. I'm sorry, I answer, because I can't think of what else to say. You saw the lawyers? She changes the subject, giving me a direct look. I nod, and I have to acknowledge that this is another reason I've been avoiding her. Oh no, she whimpers. You look so grave. I've got nothing, have I? Her eyes are wide with fear and grief. I place my hands on her shoulders and break it to her gently. Everything is in trust for me as air. Caroline lets out a sob and covers her mouth as tears fill her eyes. Damn him, she whispers. Don't worry. We'll work something out, I murmur, and hold her once more. I loved him, she says, her voice small and quiet, like a child's. I know. We both did. Though I know she also loved Kit's title and his wealth. You're not going to evict me. I take the handkerchief from her hand and wipe each of her eyes. No, of course not. You're my brother's widow and my best friend. But that's all? She gives me a watery but bitter smile, and I kiss her forehead in lieu of answering her question. Your coffee, sir, Blake says from the entrance to the conservatory. Immediately, I drop my arms and step away from Caroline. Blake enters, his face expressionless, and he's holding a tray laden with cups, milk, a silver coffee pot, and my favorite biscuits, plain chocolate digestives. Thank you, Blake, I respond, trying to ignore the slow flush I feel creeping up my neck. Brazen this out. Blake places the tray on the table beside the sofa. Will that be all, sir? For now, thank you. My tone is sharper than I intended. Blake exits the room, and Caroline pours the coffee. My shoulders slump with relief at Blake's departure, and I hear my mother's voice ringing in my head. Not in front of the staff. I'm still holding Caroline's damp handkerchief. I stare at it and frown, recalling a fragment from a dream I had last night. Or was it this morning? A young woman, an angel, possibly the Virgin Mary or a nun in blue standing in my bedroom doorway, watching over me as I slept. What the hell does that mean? I'm not religious. What? Asks Caroline. I shake my head. Nothing. I murmur, taking the cup of coffee she offers and giving her back her handkerchief.
Well, I might be pregnant, she says.
What? I blanch.
Kit, not you. You're too bloody careful.
Damn right. The ground seems to shift beneath my feet.
Kit's heir. Could this be any more complicated?
Well, if you are, we'll figure out what to do. I reply, feeling at once a moment of relief that all this responsibility might pass to Kit's child, but also a sudden and overwhelming sense of loss. The earldom is mine. For now.
Shit. Could this be any more confusing?
Chapter 3. My phone buzzes as I'm in the back of a black cab on my way to the office. It's Joe.
Mate, he says. How's it going?
He sounds somber, and I know he's referring to my frame of mind since Kit's death. I've not seen him since the funeral.
I'm surviving. Fancy a bout?
I'd love to, but I can't. I have meetings all day.
Earl shit.
I laugh.
Yes, Earl shit. Maybe later in the week?
My épée is getting rusty.
Yes, I'd like that. Or perhaps a drink.
Yeah, I'll see if Tom's around.
Cool. Thanks, Joe.
No worries, mate.
I hang up, my mood morose. I miss being able to do what the fuck I like. If I wanted to fence in the middle of the day, I could. Joe is my sparring partner and one of my closest friends. Instead, I have to go into the office and do some bloody work for a change. Kit, I blame you. The music is pounding at Lulu's. The bass reverberates through my chest. I like it this way. The noise level cuts down on unnecessary conversation. I make my way through the crowd to the bar. I need a drink and a warm, willing body. I have spent the last day and a half in tedious meetings with the two fund managers who oversee the considerable Trevethick investment portfolio and the charitable trust. The estate managers from Cornwall, Oxfordshire and Northumberland, the managing agent who handles the London properties, and with the developer who's remodelling the three mansion blocks in Mayfair. Oliver McMillan, Kit's chief operating officer and his right-hand man, has attended all of them with me. Oliver and Kit had been friends since Eton. They'd both gone to the London School of Economics until Kit dropped out to fulfil his aristocratic duty following the death of our father. Oliver is slight, with a shock of unruly blonde hair and eyes of an indeterminate colour that miss nothing. I have never warmed to him. He's ruthless and ambitious, but he knows his way around a balance sheet and can deal with the numerous personnel who answer to the Earl of Trevethick. I don't know how Kit managed it all and held down a fund manager job in the city, but he was a smart, slick bastard. Funny, too. I miss him. I order a Grey Goose and tonic. Maybe he succeeded because McMillan had his back. And I wonder if Oliver's loyalty will extend to me, or if he might take advantage of my naivete while I try to come to terms with all my new responsibilities. I just don't know. But the fact is, I don't trust him, and I make a mental note to stay circumspect in my dealings with him. The one bright spot in the last couple of days was a call from my agent telling me I have a job next week. I'd taken a great deal of pleasure in telling the old Gorgon that for the foreseeable future, I would no longer be available for modelling work. Would I miss it? I wasn't sure. Modelling could be mind-numbingly boring. But after I was sent down from Oxford, the work had gotten me out of bed and given me an excuse to stay in shape. I also got to meet hot, skinny women. I take a slug of my drink and scan the room. That's what I want now.
A hot, willing woman, skinny or otherwise. It's Let's Fuck Thursday. Her raucous laugh catches my attention, and our eyes meet. I see the appreciation and challenge in her gaze, and my cock stirs in anticipation. She has pretty hazel eyes, long brown glossy hair, and she's drinking shots. What's more, she looks sensational in the leather mini dress and her thigh-high stiletto boots. Yes, she'll do. It's 2 in the morning when I let us both into my flat. I take Letitia's coat and she turns immediately and wraps her arms around my neck. Let's go to bed, posh boy, she whispers and kisses me, hard, no preliminaries. Her coat is still in my hands and I have to steady myself against the wall to stop us both from falling. Her attack takes me by surprise. Perhaps she's more pissed than I thought. She tastes of lipstick and Jägermeister, an intriguing combination. I thread my fingers through her hair and tug, freeing my mouth. All good things, sweetheart, I chide against her lips. Let me put your coat down. Fuck my coat, she says, and kisses me again, all tongue. I'd rather fuck you. We're not going to make it to the bedroom at this rate. I put my hands on her shoulders and gently push her away. Let me see your place then, model slash photographer slash DJ, she teases, her soft Irish accent a complete contrast to her direct manner. I wonder if she'll be as forthright in bed as I follow her down the hallway into the drawing room, her heels clicking on the wooden floor. Do you act too? Great view, by the way, she says as she glances through the wall of glass that looks out over the Thames. Nice piano, she adds, and turns to face me, her eyes alight with excitement. Have you fucked on it? Lord, she has a foul mouth. Not recently. I dump her coat on the sofa. Not sure I want to right now. I'd rather bed you. I ignore her jibe about my current lack of a stable career. I haven't told her I have an empire to run. She smiles, her lipstick smudged and no doubt smeared over my mouth. The thought displeases me, and I run my fingers over my lips. She saunters toward me and tugs the lapels of my jacket, forcing me forward. Okay, posh boy. Show me what you can do. She puts her hands on my chest and rakes her nails over my sternum to the edge of my jacket. Shit! It's almost painful. She has scarlet talons, not nails, talons that match her lipstick. She slides my jacket off my shoulders, letting it fall to the floor, and starts undoing the buttons on my shirt. The mood she's in, I'm relieved that she takes her time and doesn't just rip my shirt open. I like this shirt. Slipping it off me, she lets it fall to my feet and digs her nails into my shoulders, deliberately. Ah! I hiss in pain. Cool ink, she says, as her hands travel from my shoulders, down my arms and toward the waistband of my jeans, her nails leaving tracks across my stomach. Ow! Boy, she's aggressive. I grab her hand and tug her into my arms, kissing her roughly. Let's go to bed, I say against her mouth, and before she can answer, I take her hand and haul her after me to the bedroom. There, she pushes me toward the bed and again rakes her nails over my belly as her fingers find the top button of my jeans. Fuck! She likes it rough. I flinch and catch her hands in front of her in a vice-like grip. But in reality, I'm avoiding her nails. You want to play rough? I can too. Play nice, I warn. And you first. I release her, moving her away so I have a good view. Strip, now, I order. Tossing her hair over her shoulder, she puts her hands on her hips, her mouth set in an amused challenge.
Go on, I urge.
Letitia's eyes darken, and she pauses. Say please, she whispers. I smirk. Please. She laughs.
I love your posh accent. It's just an accident of birth, sweetheart.
Keep your boots on, I add. She returns my smirk, reaches behind her, and casually unzips her tight leather dress. Wriggling her hips from side to side, she shimmies out of the dress and lets it slip down the length of her boots. I smile. She looks incredible. Slim, with small, firm breasts. She's wearing black French knickers and a matching bra and the thigh-high boots. Stepping out of her dress, she sashays toward me with a beckoning, sexy smile and grabs my hand. With surprising force, she tugs me to the bed, then places her hands on my chest and pushes me hard so that I sprawl on top of the quilt.
Take them off,
she commands, and points to my trousers as she stands over me, placing her feet wide apart.
You do it, I mouth.
She needs no further prompting, and crawls up the bed to sit astride me, grinding down on my crotch. She drags her nails down my abdomen toward my fly.
Ow! Fuck this! She's dangerous!
I sit up suddenly, taking her by surprise, and flip her onto her back, straddling her and pinning her arms down on either side of her head. She struggles beneath me, attempting to buck me off.
Hey!
She protests, glaring up at me.
I think you need to be restrained. You're dangerous.
My voice is soft as I gauge her reaction. This could go either way. Her eyes widen, and I'm not sure if it's fear or excitement.
Are you?
She whispers.
Dangerous? Me? No, not nearly as much as you.
Releasing her, I reach over to the bedside cabinet and from a drawer take out a long silk restraint and a pair of leather cuffs.
Do you want to play?
I ask, holding up both implements.
Your choice.
She gazes up at me, pupils large with lust and anxiety.
I won't hurt you.
I reassure her. That's not my scene.
I'll just keep you in line.
But the truth is, I'm worried she's going to hurt me. A teasing, seductive smile tugs at her mouth.
The silk, she says.
I smile and toss the cuffs onto the floor. Dominance as a form of self-defense. Pick a safe word.
Chelsea.
Good choice. I tie the silk around her left wrist and thread it through the slats of the bed's headboard. And then, taking her right hand, I deftly tie her right wrist to the other end of the restraint. With her arms outstretched, her nails are rendered harmless, and she looks fantastic.
If you really misbehave, I'll blindfold you too,
I murmur. She squirms.
Will you spank me?
Her voice is less than a whisper.
If you play nice. Oh. This is going to be fun.
She comes quickly and loudly, screaming and straining against the silken straps. I sit up between her thighs, my mouth slick and wet, and I flip her over and slap her ass.
Hang in there, I mutter, and slip on a condom.
Hurry up!
Fuck, is she demanding?
As you wish, I growl. And thrust inside her. I watch the rise and fall of her breasts as she sleeps. Out of habit, I go through my ritual of recalling everything I know about the woman I've just fucked. Twice. Letitia, human rights lawyer, sexually aggressive, older than me, likes to be restrained, likes it a lot, but forthright, assertive women typically do in my experience. She's a biter. Screams on orgasm, vocal, diverting, exhausting.
I wake with a start. In my dream, I've been searching for something elusive. A vision that keeps appearing and disappearing. An ethereal vision in blue. Then, just as I'd glimpsed it, I'd fallen into a wide, deep abyss. I shudder. What the hell was that about? The pallid winter sun seeps through the windows as reflections from the Thames play on the ceiling. What has woken me? Letitia. Boy, she's an animal. She isn't asleep beside me, and I can't hear anyone in the shower. Perhaps she's left already. I listen carefully for any noise within the flat. It's quiet. I grin. No awkward small talk. The day is looking up, until I remember I have a lunch appointment with my mother and my sister. I groan and pull the covers over my head. They'll want to discuss the will. Bloody hell. The Dowager, as Kit referred to her, is a formidable woman. Why the fuck she hasn't gone back to New York, I don't know. Her life is based there, not here. Something clatters to the floor somewhere in the apartment. I sit up. Shit. Letitia is still here. That means conversation. Reluctantly, I haul myself out of bed, drag on my nearest pair of jeans, and go to find out if she's as wild in broad daylight as she is in the dark. I pad down the hallway in my bare feet, but there's no one in the drawing room or the kitchen. What the fuck? I turn around at the kitchen entrance and halt. I'm expecting to see Letitia, but a slight young woman stands in the hallway staring at me. Her eyes are large and dark, reminding me of a startled doe. But she's dressed in a ghastly blue housecoat, cheap, overwashed jeans, old trainers, and a blue headscarf that conceals her hair. She says nothing. Hi. Who the hell are you? I ask.
Chapter 4. Zot, he is here, and he is mad. Alessia freezes as his blazing green eyes meet hers. Tall, lean, and half-naked, he towers over her. His hair is an unruly chestnut mess with gold highlights that glint beneath the chandelier in the hallway. He is as broad-shouldered as she remembers, but the tattoo on his upper arm is far more intricate than she recalls. All she can distinguish is a wing. A smattering of hair on his chest tapers down over a toned stomach, then resumes beneath his navel and travels farther down into his jeans. The tight black denim is ripped at the knee, but it's the hard line of his full lips and his eyes, the color of spring, in a handsome, unshaven face that make her look away. Her mouth dries, and she doesn't know if it's from nerves or from the look of him. He is so attractive. Too attractive. And he's half naked. But why is he so mad? Did she wake him? No. He will send her away from the piano. Panicked, she drops her gaze to the floor as she flounders for something to say and clutches the handle of the broom to keep her upright.
Who the hell is this timid creature standing in my hallway? I'm completely bemused. Have I seen her before? An image from a forgotten dream develops like a Polaroid in my memory. An angel in blue hovering at my bedside. But that was days ago. Could it have been her? And now she's here, rooted to the hallway floor, her impish face pale, her eyes downcast. Her knuckles grow whiter as she clasps the broom handle tighter and tighter, as if it's anchoring her to the earth. The headscarf conceals her hair, and an oversized old-fashioned nylon housecoat swamps her small frame. She looks totally out of place. Who are you? I ask again, but in a softer tone, not wanting to alarm her. Wide eyes, the color of a fine espresso, and framed by the longest lashes I've ever seen, look up at me,
then back at the floor. Shit. One peek from her dark, fathomless eyes, and I'm unsettled. She's at least a head shorter than me, perhaps 5'5" to my 6'2". Her features are delicate, high cheekbones, an upturned nose, clear, fair skin, and pale lips. She looks like she needs a few days in the sun and a good hearty meal. It's obvious that she's cleaning, but why her? Why here? Has she replaced my old Bailey? Where's Christina? I ask, growing a little frustrated at her silence. Perhaps she's Christina's daughter, or granddaughter. She continues to stare at the floor, her brow furrowed. Her even white teeth chew at her upper lip as she refuses to meet my gaze. Look at me. I will her. I want to reach forward and tilt her chin up, but as if she reads my mind, she raises her head. Her eyes meet mine, and her tongue darts out, and nervously she licks her upper lip. My whole body tightens in a hot, heavy rush as desire hits me like a demolition ball. Fuck a duck. I narrow my eyes as annoyance swiftly follows my desire. What the hell is wrong with me? Why does a woman I've never met have such an effect on me? It's irritating. Beneath fine arched brows, her eyes grow wider, and she takes a step back, fumbling with the broom so that it falls from her hands and clatters onto the floor. She bends with easy, economic grace to pick it up, and when she's standing once more, she fixates on the handle, a slow flush staining her cheeks as she mumbles something unintelligible. Bloody hell! Am I intimidating the poor girl? I don't mean to. I'm annoyed at myself, not her. Or maybe it's another reason. Perhaps you don't understand me, I say, more to myself, and I run a hand through my hair as I bring my body to heel. Christina's mastery of English extended to the words yes and here, which often meant lots of gesticulating on my part when I needed her to undertake tasks that went beyond her usual cleaning routine. This girl is probably Polish too.
I am cleaner, mister,
she whispers, her eyes still downcast and her eyelashes fanned out above her luminous cheeks. Where's Christina?
She has returned to Poland.
When?
Since last week.
This is news. Why the hell did I not know this? I liked Christina. She'd cleaned for me for 3 years and knew all my dirty little secrets, and I never got to say goodbye. Maybe it's temporary. Is she coming back? I ask. The lines in the girl's forehead deepen, but she says nothing, though her eyes flick to my feet. For some unknown reason, this makes me feel self-conscious. Placing both hands on my hips, I step backward as my bewilderment grows. How long have you been here? She responds in a breathless, barely audible voice.
In England?
Look at me, please, I ask. Why is she so reluctant to look up? Her slim fingers tighten around the broom again, as if she might brandish it as a weapon. Then she swallows and raises her head, regarding me with large, liquid brown eyes. Eyes I could drown in. My mouth dries as my body comes to attention again. Fuck.
I have been in England since 3 weeks.
Her voice is clearer and stronger, with an accent I don't recognize. And as she speaks, she pushes her small chin toward me in defiance. Her lips are now rosy, her bottom lip plumper than her top, and she licks the upper one again. Hell! I'm aroused once more. I take another step away from her. 3 weeks, I mumble, baffled by my reaction to her. Why is this happening to me? What is it about her? She's fucking exquisite.
The still, small voice roars in my head. Yes. For a woman dressed in a nylon housecoat, she's hot. Concentrate. She hasn't answered my question. No, I meant, how long have you been here in my flat? Where does this girl come from? I rack my brain. Mrs. Blake had organized Christina through some contact she had, but Christina's replacement remains silent. You speak English? I ask, willing her to speak. What's your name? She frowns, looking at me like I'm an idiot. Yes, I speak English. My name is Alessia Damachi. I have been in your apartment since 10 o'clock this morning. Wow, she really does speak English. Right, well, how do you do, Alessia Damachi? My name is... What should I say? Trevethic? Trevelyan? Maxim. She gives me a brief nod, and for a moment I think she might curtsy. But she stands still, grasping the broom and stripping me naked with her anxious gaze. Suddenly I feel like the walls of the hallway are closing in and suffocating me. I want to flee from this stranger and her soul-searching eyes. Well, good to meet you, Alessia. You'd better get on and clean, then. As an afterthought, I add, in fact, you can change the sheets on my bed. I wave in the general direction of my bedroom. You know where the linen is kept, don't you? She nods again, but still doesn't move. I'm going to the gym, I mutter, though why I'm explaining myself to her, I don't know.
As he stalks back down the hallway toward his bedroom, Alessia wilts against the broom and takes a deep, relieved breath. She watches the flex and pull of the muscles on his back, right down to the two dimples that show just above the waistband of his jeans. It's a distracting sight, very distracting. He's even more distracting upright than when he was lying down. He disappears into his room and she closes her eyes, her heart sinking. He didn't ask her to leave, but he may call Magda's friend Agatha and ask her to find someone else to clean his place. He seemed so cross that she had disturbed him, and then he became angrier still. Why? Alessia frowns and tries to quell her rising panic as she glances into the living room at the piano. No, that cannot happen. She will beg him to let her stay if she must. She doesn't want to leave. She can't leave. The piano is her one source of escape, her only happiness. And then there's the Mister himself, his honed stomach, his bare feet, and his intense eyes sear her imagination. He has the face of an angel, the body of, well, she blushes. She should not think of such things. He's so handsome. No, stop. Concentrate. With frantic strokes, she continues to sweep the wooden floor of non-existent dirt. She will have to be the best cleaner he's ever had, so he won't want to replace her. With her mind resolved, she goes into the living room to sweep, tidy, and polish. 10 minutes later, she hears the front door slam as she finishes plumping the black cushions on the L-shaped couch. Good, he has gone. She goes straight to his bedroom to strip the bed. The room is untidy, as usual, clothes and strange cuffs on the floor, curtains half open, and the bedding a tangled mess. But she collects all the clothes and strips the bed quickly. She wonders why there's a wide silk ribbon tied to the headboard, but unwinds it and places it on his nightstand next to the cuffs. As she throws a clean white sheet on the bed, she wonders what these items are for. She has no idea and doesn't want to hazard a guess. She makes the rest of the bed, then ventures into his bathroom to clean.
I run like I've never run before. I complete my 5 miles on the treadmill in record time. But I can't stop playing the conversation with the new daily in my mind. Bugger. 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 I bend down and place my hands on my knees, trying to catch my breath. I am running from my fucking daily. cleaner, whatever she calls herself, escaping from her big brown eyes. No, I'm running from my reaction to her. Those eyes are going to haunt me for the rest of the day. Standing, I wipe the sweat from my brow, and a vision of her in that headscarf on her knees in front of me comes unwelcome to my mind. My body clenches, again. And this is just at the thought of her. Fuck. Angrily, I rub the sweat off my face with a towel and decide to do some weights. Yes, that should get her out of my mind. I pick up two of the heavier dumbbells and start my routine. Of course, doing weights gives me space to think. In all honesty, I'm confused by my reaction to her. I can't remember meeting anyone who's had that kind of effect on me. Perhaps it's stress. Yes, that's the most logical explanation. I'm grieving Kit's loss and dealing with the aftermath. Kit, you're a bastard for leaving me with all this responsibility. It's overwhelming. Fucking overwhelming. I push all thoughts of Kit and her out of my mind as I concentrate on my workout and count through my biceps curls. And I've got lunch with my mother in 2 hours. Shit.
Alessia is in the laundry room, moving wet clothes into the dryer when she hears the front door slam again. No, he is back. Glad that she's hidden away in the smallest room in the apartment, she sets up the ironing board and starts ironing the few garments that are ready. Surely he will not come in here. When she finishes the fifth shirt, she hears the door slam again, and she knows that she's on her own once more. It irks her that he's not shouted a goodbye like he did when he thought she was Christina, but she shakes off the feeling and finishes the ironing as quickly as she can. Once done, she goes to check his bedroom to see if he has left it in a mess. Sure enough, his gym clothes are scattered on the floor. Gingerly, she picks up each item. They are all damp with his sweat, but to her surprise, she doesn't find this as repellent as she did before she met him. She places the items in his laundry basket and checks the bathroom. The fresh, clean scent of his soap hangs in the air. Closing her eyes, she inhales, and suddenly she's transported back to the tall evergreens that surround her parents' house in Kukus. She savors the fragrance, ignoring her pang of homesickness. London is her home now. She wipes down the sink and is finished with half an hour to spare. She runs straight to the living room and sits down in front of the piano. As her fingers caress the keys, the strains of Bach's Prelude in C-sharp major fill the apartment, the notes dancing in vibrant colors into the corners of the room and soothing her troubled soul.
I stride into my mother's favorite restaurant on Aldwych. I'm early, but I don't give a fuck. I need a drink. Not only to forget my brush with the new daily, but I need some liquid fortification to face my mother.
Maxim!
I turn, and behind me is the one woman in the world I adore. Marianne, my younger sister by a year, is walking through the foyer. Her eyes, the same shade as mine, light up when I turn to face her, and she throws her arms around my neck. Her red hair flying into my face because she's only a few inches shorter than me.
Hey, M.A., I've missed you,
I say as I hug her.
Maxi,
her voice catches in her throat.
Shit, not here.
I hug her harder, willing her not to cry, and I'm surprised by the raw emotion that burns my throat. She sniffs, and her eyes are red-rimmed when I release her. This is not like her. She usually takes after our mother, who keeps her emotions under ruthless control.
I still can't believe he's gone,
she says as she clutches a tissue.
I know, me neither.
Let's sit and get a drink. I take her elbow, and we follow the hostess into the large wood-paneled restaurant. The place has a classic, old-fashioned feel. Brass lamps, dark green leather upholstery, crisp white linen, and sparkling crystal glasses. The atmosphere buzzes with the chatter of businessmen and women and the clatter of cutlery on fine china. I focus on the sight of the hostess's shapely backside, swathed in a tight pencil skirt, and the sound of her stiletto heels clicking on the polished tiled floor as she shows us to our table. I hold out Marianne's chair, and we sit down. Two Bloody Marys, I say to the hostess as she hands us each a menu and gives me a coy look, which I don't return. She might have a fine arse and a cute smile, but I'm not in the mood to play. I'm preoccupied by my encounter with my daily and the memory of anxious, dark eyes. I frown, dismissing the thought, and turn my full attention to my sister as the hostess leaves with a disappointed pout. When did you get back from Cornwall? I ask.
Yesterday.
How's the Dowager?
Maxim! You know she hates that term.
I give her an exaggerated sigh.
Okay,
how's the mothership? Marianne glares at me for a moment, but then her face falls.
Shit.
Sorry, I mumble, chastened.
She's really shaken up, but it's hard to tell. You know what she's like.
Marianne's eyes cloud, and she looks troubled.
I think there's something she's not telling us.
I nod. I know only too well. My mother rarely reveals a chink in her polished armor. She hadn't wept at Kit's funeral. She'd been the epitome of grace under fire, brittle but gracious, as always. I hadn't wept either. I'd been too busy nursing one hell of a hangover. I swallow and change the subject. When do you go back to work?
Monday,
Marianne answers with a small, sad twist of her mouth. Of all the Trevelyan children, it's Marianne who has excelled academically. From Wickham Abbey School, she'd gone up to read medicine at Corpus Christi, Oxford, and is now a junior doctor at the Royal Brompton Hospital, specializing in cardiothoracic medicine. She had followed her vocation. A calling that was born the day our father suffered a massive coronary and died from a heart attack. She was 15 years old, and she wanted to save him. Our father's death rocked each of us differently, and Kit most of all, given that he'd had to drop out of college and assume the earldom. Me, I lost my only parental ally.
How's Caro?
She asks. Grieving. Pissed off that Kit didn't leave her anything in his will, stupid bastard. I growl.
Who's a stupid bastard?
A clipped mid-Atlantic voice demands. Rowena, Dowager Countess of Trevethick, towers above us, auburn-haired, groomed, and composed in her immaculate navy Chanel suit and pearls. I stand.
Rowena?
I say, and give her a detached peck on her upturned cheek, then hold out her chair for her to sit.
Is that any way to greet your grieving mother, Maxim?
Rowena scolds as she sits down and places her Birkin handbag on the floor beside her. She reaches across the table and clasps Marianne's hand.
Hello, darling. I didn't hear you go out.
I just needed some fresh air, mother.
Marianne replies as she returns our mother's squeeze.
Rowena, Countess of Trevethick, kept her title in spite of her divorce from our father. She spends most of her time between New York, where she lives and likes to play, and London, where she edits Dernier Cree, the glossy women's magazine.
I'll have a glass of the Chablis, she says to the waiter as he delivers two Bloody Marys to the table. She arches a brow in disapproval as we both take long sips. She is still impossibly slim and impossibly beautiful, especially through a lens. She was the it girl of her generation and had become the muse of many a photographer, including my father, the 11th Earl of Trevethick. He was devoted to her. His title and money had seduced her into marriage, but when she left him, he never recovered.
4 years after their divorce, he died of a broken heart. I study her through hooded eyes. Her face is baby smooth, no doubt as a result of her latest chemical peel. The woman is obsessed with maintaining her youth, and she only deviates from her rigorous diet of vegetable juices or whatever her latest food fad is with the odd glass of wine. There is no doubting that my mother is beautiful, but she is as duplicitous as she is stunning, and my poor father paid the price. I understand you've met with Raja, she says directly to me. Yes, and? She glares at me in her slightly myopic way, because she's far too vain to wear glasses. It's all in trust to me. And Caroline? Nothing. I see. Well, we can't let the poor girl starve. We? I ask. Rowena flushes. You, she says, her voice frigid. You can't let the poor girl starve. On the other hand, she has her trust fund, and when her father shuffles off his mortal coil, she'll inherit a fortune. Kit chose wisely in that regard. Unless her stepmother disinherits her, I retort, and take another much-needed sip of Bloody Mary. My mother purses her lips. Why don't you set her to work? Maybe the Mayfair development. She has a good eye for interior design, and she'll need the distraction. I think we should let Caroline decide what she wants to do. I fail to keep the resentment out of my voice. This is my mother's usual high-handed manner in dealing with the family that she deserted many years ago. Are you happy with her staying at Trevelyan House? She asks, ignoring my tone. Rowena, I'm not about to make her homeless. Maximilian, would you mind addressing me as mother? When you start behaving like one, I'll take it into consideration. Maxim, Marianne warns, and her eyes flash a fiery green. Feeling like a rebuked child, I clamp my mouth shut and scrutinize the menu before I say something I'll regret. Rowena continues, ignoring my rudeness. We'll need to finalize all the details for the memorial service. I was thinking we could do this just before Easter. I'll get one of my lead writers to do Kit's eulogy, unless... She pauses as her voice cracks, causing both me and Marianne to look up from our menus in surprise. Her eyes grow moist, and for the first time since she buried her eldest child, she looks her age. She clutches a monogrammed handkerchief and brings it to her lips as she composes herself. Bugger. I feel like a shit. She's lost her eldest son, her favorite child. Unless, I prompt, you or Marianne could write it. She whispers, with an uncharacteristic, beseeching look at both of us. Sure, Marianne says. I'll do it. No, I should do it. I'll expand on the eulogy I did for his funeral. Should we order lunch? I ask, wanting to change the subject and feeling uncomfortable at my mother's unusual display of emotion. Rowena picks at her salad while Marianne chases the last of her omelette around her plate with her knife and fork. Caroline said she might be pregnant, I announce as I take another mouthful of Chateaubriand. Rowena's head comes up quickly, and she narrows her eyes. She did say they were trying, Marianne adds. Well, if she is, it might be the only chance I get to have a grandchild, and for this family to secure the earldom for another generation. Rowena casts an accusing look at both of us. That would make you a grandmother, I say dryly, disregarding the rest of her comment. How will that go down with your latest cute conquest in New York? Rowena's propensity for young men, sometimes younger than her youngest son, is renowned. She glowers at me as I take another bite of my steak, but I hold her glare, daring her to say anything. Strangely, for the first time ever, I feel as though I have the upper hand with my mother. It's a novelty. So much of my adolescence was spent striving and failing to gain her approval. Marianne scowls at me. I shrug and slice another piece of delicious steak and pop it into my mouth.
Neither you nor Marianne shows any sign of settling down, and God forbid that the estates should pass to your father's brother. Cameron's a last cause, Rowena grumbles, choosing to ignore my insolence.
My encounter with Alessia DiMarchi springs unbidden into my head, and I frown. I glance at Marianne, and she's frowning too, and staring at her uneaten food.
Oh? What about the young man you met when you were skiing in Whistler?
Rowena asks Marianne. It's dusk when I return to my flat, drained and a little drunk. I have endured a forensic cross-examination from my mother on the status of all the estates, the London leasehold and rental properties, and the apartment refurbishment in Mayfair, not to mention the value of the Trevethick portfolio. I wanted to remind her that it's none of her fucking business, but I feel a novel sense of pride that I was able to answer each of her questions in detail. Even Marianne was impressed. Oliver McMillan had briefed me well. As I flop down on the sofa in front of the large TV in my spotless, empty flat, my mind wanders, as it has all day, back to the conversation I had this morning with the dark-eyed Daly. Where is she now? How long will she be in the UK? What does she look like without the shapeless housecoat on? What color is her hair? Dark like her eyebrows? How old is she? She looks young. Too young, maybe. Too young for what? I shift uncomfortably in my seat and click through the TV channels. Perhaps my reaction to her was a one-off. I mean, she looked like a nun. Maybe I have a thing for nuns. I laugh to myself at the ridiculous thought. My phone buzzes, and it's a text from Caroline.
How was lunch?
Tiring. The dowager was her usual self.
I'll be the dowager if you get married.
Sad face. Why is she telling me this? Besides, I have no interest in marrying anyone. Well, not at the moment. My mother's tirade about grandchildren comes to mind, and I shake my head. Kids? No. Just no. Not yet, anyway.
That's not happening anytime soon.
Good. What are you doing?
Home, watching TV.
Are you okay? Can I come over?
The last thing I want or need is Caroline messing with my head or any other part of my anatomy.
I'm not alone.
It's a small white lie.
You're still whoring, I see. Cheeky face.
You know me well. Good night, Cara. I stare at the phone, waiting for her response. But it remains silent, so I turn my attention back to the television, only to find there's nothing I want to watch. I switch it off. Restless, I sit down at my desk and open mail on the iMac. There are a few emails from Oliver about various estate issues that I don't want to deal with on a Friday evening. They can wait until Monday. I check the time, and I'm surprised that it's only 8 p.m. Too early to go out, and the thought of a crowded club doesn't appeal to me right now. Feeling cooped up but reluctant to leave my flat, I wander over to the piano and take a seat. A composition I'd started weeks and weeks ago sits neglected on the rest. I follow the notes, the melody sounding in my head, and before I know it, my fingers are pressing the keys and playing the tune. The image of a young girl in blue, with dark, dark eyes that strip me bare, pops into my head. New notes form in a flurry, and I continue to improvise, playing beyond where my composition had stalled. Bloody hell! In a rare rush of excitement, I stop, fish my phone out of my pocket, and find the voice memo app. Hitting the record button, I begin again. The notes ring out through the room. Evocative, melancholic, stirring me, inspiring me.
I am cleaner, mister.
Yes, I speak English. My name is Alessia Damachi. Alessia. When I look at my watch, it's after midnight. Stretching my arms above my head, I examine the manuscript in front of me. It's complete. I've written a whole piece, and I am overwhelmed with a sense of achievement. How long have I been trying to do this? And all it took was meeting my new daily. I shake my head, and for once, I go to bed early and alone.
Chapter 5. It's with trepidation that Alessia unlocks the door to the apartment with the piano. Her heart sinks when she's met with the unnerving silence of the alarm. The hush means that the confusing green-eyed mister is in residence. He has invaded her dreams ever since she'd seen him sprawled naked on his bed. But during her weekend, in quiet moments, all she'd been able to think about was him. She doesn't understand why, though perhaps it's the brief, penetrating stare he gave her when he towered over her in the hallway, or because he's handsome and tall and lean, with dimples on his back, above his muscled, athletic behind. Stop! Her wayward thoughts are out of control. Quietly, she slips off her wet boots and socks, then scampers in her bare feet down the hallway, through the kitchen. The counter is littered with beer bottles and takeaway boxes, but Alessia scuttles into the safety of the laundry room. She props her boots on the radiator, along with her socks, in the hope they might dry out before she leaves. Peeling off her wet hat and gloves, she hangs them on the hook beside the boiler, then removes the anorak that Magda gave her. She places it on the same hook and frowns as water drips onto the tiled floor. Her jeans are soaked from the torrential rain, too. She shivers as she removes them and struggles into her housecoat, grateful that the plastic bag has kept it dry. The hem falls to below her knees, so that she's not immodest without her jeans. Peeking into the kitchen, she checks that he's not there. He's probably still asleep, so she pops her sodden jeans into the dryer and switches it on. At least they'll be dry when she goes home. Her feet are red and itch with cold, so she grabs a dry towel from the pile of clean laundry and rubs them both vigorously, massaging life back into her toes. Once they're warm, she slips on her sneakers.
Alessia!
Salt! The mister is awake. What does he want? As quickly as her chilled fingers will let her, she pulls her scarf from the plastic bag and ties it around her head, conscious that her braided hair is also wet. Taking a deep breath, she exits the laundry room to find him standing in the kitchen. She wraps her arms around herself, trying to find some warmth.
Hi,
he says, and smiles. Alessia glances at him. His smile is dazzling, lighting up his handsome face and his emerald eyes. She looks away, blinded by his good looks and embarrassed by her creeping blush. But she feels a little warmer. He had been so cross the last time she saw him. What has brought about this change of heart?
Alessia, he says again.
Yes, mister, she answers, keeping her eyes lowered. At least he is dressed this time.
I just wanted to say hi.
She peeks up at him but doesn't understand what he wants. His smile isn't as broad this time, and his brow is furrowed.
Hi,
she says, uncertain what's expected of her. He nods and shuffles from one foot to the other, hesitant. She thinks he might say something further, but he turns and leaves the kitchen.
What an idiot I am! I mimic hi to myself in ridicule. I've thought of nothing but this girl all weekend, and the best I can come up with is, I just wanted to say hi. What the fuck is wrong with me? I wander back to my bedroom and notice a trail of wet footprints on the hallway floor.